Trainer Talks and Tales acknowledges the traditional owners and custodians of the land in which we're recording this podcast, the Turrbal and Yugara people of Meanjin. We pay our respects to elders past and present and extend our respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today.
Trainer Talks and Tales love having an array of guests with a variety of opinions. However, the views of the individuals do not necessarily reflect the perspectives of the host facilities. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Trainer Talks and Tales. You are, of course, joined just by myself, Daisy. I have had a little bit of an update from Tess. She is doing so well, and she is currently on our favorite place in Australia, on Minjeriba Island or North Stradbroke Island. So it is the very first time that Indy has gone on a long holiday. So she's heading there with some family for a couple of weeks. So I'm sure she is having an amazing time, but we are likely to hear from Tess over the next couple of weeks, jumping in and out on the podcast where she can. And if Indy's having a bit of a sleep or not needing to be held or fed the whole time, then she will jump on and say hello. So you will get to hear from Tess soon, I'm sure. But we do have a fantastic episode for you guys. We are joined again by Dean Jones. So Dean has come on the podcast really like right at the very start. So if you haven't had an opportunity to listen to his episode, I definitely recommend. I'm pretty sure it's episode 3. And Dean actually came on and chatted all about elephants, spoke about some of the incredible concept training that he's been doing with the elephants. And we really dived into his past as a dolphin trainer and how that skill has been able to kind of lead him on the pathway and where he is today. However, with this episode, we're kind of touching on a few different things. We're talking a little bit more about differential reinforcement and how Dean and the team down at Sydney Zoo have been able to utilize that to better some behaviors, to better the welfare of the animals that they have in their care. I was lucky enough to head down to Sydney a couple of weeks ago, and it was my very first time visiting Sydney Zoo. So I was really excited to go. And it was honestly amazing. We had such a good day, and I cannot thank Dean in particular enough for just going above and beyond, for showing us absolutely everything when we were down there. We had the opportunity to hang out with capybara for the first time. And if I'm totally honest, I never really understood the hype around capybara, but now I completely understand the hype and I am absolutely amongst the hype with capybara. So we had the pleasure of hanging out with those guys. We got to see some of the amazing training that they've been doing with the hyenas and with the lions, as well as looking at some of the amazing stuff, obviously, the elephants are doing. And we will probably touch on some of the elephant stuff in the future with hopefully another guest there. So that's been really, really exciting. So if you haven't had the opportunity to get to Sydney Zoo, I absolutely recommend it. Massive shout out to Dean, of course, and to Tim, Cookie, Samina. We are so incredibly grateful for the time that you allocated to us and all the amazing things that we saw. And I cannot wait to see what's going to happen next. But for now, that is it from me, and I will pass over to Dean. We hope you enjoy this conversation. Dean, welcome back to Training Talks and Tales. We are so excited to have you back on the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me again.
Yeah, of course. We got the opportunity to speak a little bit about dolphins and elephants last time that we talked, but this time we are talking about some different species, which is super exciting. But since you were on here last time, nothing's changed in the sense that we still start our podcast with our Fast Five. Are you happy if we go straight into that?
Let's do it.
Okay, question number one, favorite primate?
Mandrill.
Cookies or cake?
Cake.
Birds or reptiles?
Reptiles.
Where is your next holiday you've got planned?
It isn't planned yet, but I want to go to Alaska.
Amazing. And last question, giraffe or rhino?
Oh, rhino.
Nicely done. Well done. Now, I know last time you were on the podcast, we touched a little bit about sort of your background and your career. We obviously have already talked a little bit about that. So I thought maybe we could start off today's episode by talking a little bit more about what you're currently doing. If you could share for the people who may have missed that episode, what your current job title is, what species you're looking after, and what sort of a day in the life might look like for you.
Yeah, sure. So I'm the animal training manager for Sydney Zoo. My day will look nothing like the day prior or the next day. So I look after all of the behavioral programs for all of the species in the zoo. We have that entails everything from primates to hoofstock to reptiles, everything. So yeah, pretty much heading around to each department. We'll kind of organize what training sessions we have for the day, a little bit of mentoring with the teams as well, looking at the behavioral program in itself, and basically where we're at with each of the species.
Sounds like such a fun role. And I had the pleasure of coming down not that long ago and seeing all of your training in action. And you guys are doing such a fantastic job with so many training programs leading the way, which is great.
Yeah, awesome. I loved having you there, and yeah, really appreciate it. The team, the team all across the zoo is doing really well.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I guess today we're maybe focusing on primarily, I guess we're going to talk about lions. So do you mind maybe introducing us to your pride and what sort of your social dynamics look like within that group?
Yes, so we have a bachelor group of three males. They're all about 7.5 years old now. They're all brothers from the same litter. We have the largest is Virunga, and he is probably my favorite. He is very full on. He is the most full on out of the three. But he also has this really soft and affectionate side, which you do not think he has when you work with him until he kind of lets it shine a little bit later on. And then Bakari is kind of next in line in the hierarchy, although it does sometimes change. He's a very switched on animal. He's very smart, very calculating. He's definitely the brains of the group. And then Karu is the lowest ranked. He is happy just to stay out of everybody's way, but then he will have random spurts of confidence, which is great. We actually saw his confidence level increase dramatically when we started his formal training program, which was a really nice surprise, to a nice little cherry on top to the training program. Watching him come out of his shell was, yeah, the look on the staff's faces who work with him every day, it was, yeah, that was a favorite for me with him.
Yeah, that's so exciting, and I can't wait to dive into that a little bit more. Do you ever struggle with any sort of aggression between the three of them, or are they pretty content with each other's company most of the time?
They're a great group together. Obviously with lions around food, we have to be really smart how we work with them. We can train them and feed them in multiple ways. We can either do it as a big group all together. So we'll have a trainer on each line. We'll be out on habitat, or we'll be in the dens back of house, or we can separate them individually and work them one-on-one. But obviously around food, their behavior intensifies quite a bit, which can cause aggression towards each other. So we just have to be smart about that, which, you know, keeping their distance and all of those things will help. But as a general whole, they're a great little trio together.
Yeah, that's cool. And I guess looking a little bit more into their training, so what sort of food is food their primary reinforcement? And did you guys end up conditioning a bridge to work with your lions?
Yeah, so meat is their favorite. We also use like blood and water mixed together from their diet. And occasionally we'll use like a lactose-free milk that we'll mix in with the blood and the water, just to add variety to Reinforcer. Oddly, with Virunga, actually probably with all of them, but especially Virunga, who can be the most intense to work, especially with food, the blood or the milk actually seems to chill him out quite a bit. So if he's really heightened, we'll probably use that reinforcer. It's like he turns into a little kitten when he gets milk. He just really goes really chill, which is quite funny. And we did condition them a bridge. All of the species across the zoo, most of them are conditioned a whistle bridge.
Okay, that makes sense, and that kind of keeps it easy across the board if everyone uses that for the animals.
Yeah, you can't take the dolphin trainer out of me. Everyone's getting a whistle.
And what are like some examples of some behaviours that you maintain with your lions every day?
So a lot of husbandry behaviours, and a lot of behaviours to make shifting them super easy. So they know obviously a station, they know a follow queue, they know a send, so we can send them from trainer to trainer. They know mouth opens, paw presents, lay downs, side presents. Just last week, we were able to vaccinate them all voluntarily, which was great. It was the first time they'd had voluntary vaccine or voluntary IM injection. And then, yeah, a few other things that we're working on, but they're the ones that we are all kind of really solid at the moment, remembering that their training really only began about 12 months ago.
Yeah, that's so interesting and so cool that you've been able to achieve that. Do you generally work like a trainer per animal ratio, or can you work them in a social group?
We will keep them one trainer per animal, just so that they don't fight over food. At the most part, we'll do that. And just like with the other species, we'll have one trainer assigned to a behavior with each cat, but everybody can work each cat. Just so everyone gets kind of a chance to train something different with a different line, because they all learn really different.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's really cool. Now, I would really love to touch on and talk to you a little bit about differential reinforcement, because I know that you have used it quite recently with your lions and some of your other species as well. Do you want to maybe start with just kind of explaining what we're talking about when we say differential reinforcement?
Sure. So one of the first tasks that I tackled when I started my new role was actually fixing a behavior with the lions that we as a zoo deemed as an undesirable behavior with them. And it was something that has certainly been incidentally reinforced throughout their history. So differential reinforcement is basically a behavioral modification techniques or a technique that involves reinforcing behaviors that we want while withholding reinforcement from behaviors that we don't want, basically. And there's quite a few different types of differential reinforcement. We mostly use DRIs, DRAs, and DROs. And that kind of all sounds a bit crazy if you're not too averse in them. But basically, differential reinforcement or a DRI, differential reinforcement of an incompatible behavior, basically means we reinforce a behavior that is incompatible or can't happen at the same time as the behavior that we don't want to occur. So in the case of the lions that were banging on doors, basically they wanted the doors to be open because they knew that the door being open meant food was on the other side. What we would do is reinforce them for laying down instead, because you can't bang on the door if you're laying down on the ground. It's impossible to do at the same time. So to us, laying down was a far more acceptable behavior than banging on the slides themselves. For the lions, for this behavior to work, what we kind of had to do at the start, which doesn't really follow the true definition of a DRI, is that we had to kind of call them away from the slide to reinforce them. And that's just based on how the facility is set up. It's really difficult to throw meat through a tiny square of mesh to reach the other side of a den. That's basically how we started the behavior. So I guess in a way, the lions had learned that the slides, which are basically the doors that separate them, meant food. So if the slide was closed, they would bang on the slide until the door was open, and then they would receive reinforcement. So I guess our goal, we kind of had to break it down into two parts. First of all, we wanted them to not elicit that behavior that we didn't like, which was the banging on the slides. And the second part was we wanted them to learn to ignore the slide altogether. Basically, the door moving, we had to turn from meaning food to the door moving meant absolutely nothing. There's nothing involved there. So we had to train all three cats this at the same time, which was a little bit of a challenge to start with. Yeah, we basically started with teaching them to lay down instead of banging on the slide. If they were in the lay down position, then they couldn't bang on the slide. So we would reinforce them after a few seconds, and then we would approximate that higher up. And then we would get a second keeper on the slides and we would get them to move the slides and we would reinforce the cat for not paying attention, not looking at the slide, not moving through them. And then we trained them a follow cue. So once the doors could be open and closed, it didn't really matter. The other trainer would reinforce them for not moving. They would only get reinforcement for when they were asked to move with the keeper themselves.
Okay, so just to summarize that, the lie down was the incompatible behavior to extinguish the scratching or the kind of frustration towards the gates moving?
Yeah, so, you know, my interpretation of it was that the lions knew that when the doors were closed, their diet or food would be put out, and then they wanted those doors opened because they kind of knew that, hey, that meant food. Then they were incidentally reinforced because eventually we had to open the doors, which only reinforced the animals for that banging behavior. So we kind of thought, well, what's a more acceptable behavior than banging on the doors, laying down and waiting patiently? So again, initially this had to have quite a number of people just for this session. We would have two people out putting food out. We would have three people, one on each cat. And we would have a minimum of two people working slides. So it initially was quite resource heavy. And then we eventually, once all the cats were separated, we got this down to, you know, most of the time, just one person being able to reinforce each of the cats for sitting still, one person on slides and one person putting food out. So we were able to reduce the number of staff eventually, which was another sort of goal, but we had to resource it heavily early on just to get everything done and to make sure that we were able to reinforce those behaviors that we wanted to.
Absolutely. And it's an amazing example of the use of a DRI, and how successful it's been, obviously, for all three of your lines. How long did that sort of process take from sort of start to finish or to where we are up to today?
They each have, obviously, being all individuals, different learning capabilities, but it was only a few weeks. I mean, we saw really big improvements straight away within a few sessions to really solidify and to have the animals understand exactly what was happening and to start to reduce staffing numbers there. We, you know, we were only doing it for a few weeks, remembering that we had three feed days a week. So it was only happening three times a week. It's not something that we could work multiple times a day. But yeah, it honestly didn't take as long as I thought it would initially. And to be honest, it's been one of those behaviors that's maintained. We've really had to do very little maintenance on this behavior since it occurred or since we trained it. The only thing that we did do or have started doing is increasing a little bit more by asking the lions to stay. So that the trainer working them, asking them to stay in that lay down position, and then that trainer going over and moving the slides and opening and closing the slides themselves. So we popped in a little video that will accompany this post, I'm sure, just showing that behavior. So we can ask the line to stay. We can walk over, open and close the slide, which really solidifies to us that, hey, the line now understands that the slide opening and closing does not mean we walk through it. We wait until the trainer asks us to go.
Yeah, absolutely. Such an amazing example of how successful that's been. I was going to leave one of the listener questions till the end, but I actually think it kind of fits in a little bit better now. And like, so is your goal with this to be able to maintain it with primary every time, or are you looking at moving to a more bearable schedule with this particular behavior?
We will probably keep it with primary reinforcement. We randomly reinforce it now. It's not, we have it on a pretty decent schedule. And like I said, we use a lot of variety as much variety as we can in terms of what reinforcers we give them. One of them, Karoo, actually one of his favorite reinforcers is mixed spice. So what? When we, yeah, he likes to roll in it. I don't get it. He likes to smell good for the lines. But early on, it was actually one of the things that we were able to get him to capture with him doing it. Any other behavior other than slide bashing. He didn't want to come over and eat from us because he thought, well, what's the point? I know my food's that way. So the way we actually broke his behavior, that behavior early on, was by flooding the den with or the corner of the den with the mixed spice, and he would rather come over and roll in that than go bang on the slide, which then we were able to reinforce him. That's kind of the only way we could get him to break that behavior early on, which was really cool.
That's so cool and so interesting that you obviously need to, you know, we can work with a species, but knowing an individual animal is so important when teaching new things and understanding them as well.
Exactly right. Coming in as the trainer, like obviously, you know, there's a whole toolkit of tools that I can give the team. But it was one of the lion keeper's duty that was like, oh, if Karoo's not coming over for food, his favorite thing is five spice. And I was like, great, let's give it to him. That's kind of how we were able to get that one.
Have you been able to use this tool at all with any other species that you work with?
Yeah, we use differential reinforcement across a multitude of species. Probably the ones that jump out the most would be our chimp family. Our family group came to us from Europe and have quite unique behaviours. The ones that sort of jump to mind, we've got some of the animals that will sometimes tell us to hurry up if we're not reinforcing them quick enough. And they can bang their hand on the mesh to try and speed up our reinforcement. So again, banging their hand like, you know, hurry up, probably isn't a behavior that we would want. However, if they place their hand palm up, we can reinforce that behavior. So that particular form of differential reinforcement is what we call a DRA, which is differential reinforcement of an alternative behavior. So the behavior still elicits the same response. However, it's a much, or it's a behavior that we kind of deem acceptable. So the animal is still telling us, you know, you can hurry up and reinforce me now. I'm happy to reinforce them if the hand's nice and calm and palms facing up, we can pop food into that one. However, I'm not going to reinforce them for banging their hand on the mesh. Same deal, we can use a DRI with them. If the chimp holds onto the mesh in a nice, calm manner, we can reinforce that. Holding onto the mesh is completely incompatible with banging the mesh. They can't do that if they're holding onto it. So that's a good example of a DRI with them. In fact, for safety with chimps, we actually encourage them now to all hold onto the mesh while we reinforce them. It's as part of just our safety procedures with them.
And so just touching back at the start of that with the hand up tool and the use of that as a DRA, is that almost like you've taught it as an like similar to a precursor in the sense of thank you for providing that information? What are your next steps when that chimp provides that information? Do you reinforce that for not sort of progressing that behavior, or is that the new frustration behavior? I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, no. So ideally we would want that behavior to extinguish altogether. Okay. And I guess this is just the path that it's taking. So while I could sit there and ignore the animal the entire time if they were banging on the mesh, at some point I need to reinforce them for a behavior, and a palm up is a far nicer behavior. I can then fade that behavior out even further. Basically, throughout differential reinforcement, we're trying to extinguish behaviors that we don't want. It's a far nicer and more effective way than punishes, but we just have to find the way that works. And sometimes they will present themselves in the smallest and the quickest way, and then we can reinforce those behaviors. Differential reinforcement is all founded on reinforcement. So we know that the more we reinforce the behaviors that we want, they are the ones that are going to take over as the dominant behaviors. We simply ignore and withhold reinforcement from those behaviors that we don't want. It's very close in the extinction, in the realm of extinction as well. However, we're just focusing on those behaviors that we want. If I can't get any other behavior other than the palm up for that particular behavior, then that's the one I'm going to take. And then I can work from there. When that's the dominant behavior, I can then work on extinguishing that with another behavior that I kind of deem as more acceptable.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really, you explained that really, really well. And it will be really exciting to see how you can transition that behavior possibly to less. And it's cool that you as your team can work out what behavior you're going to accept as well. And that will possibly change going forward with the progression of that teaching.
Yeah, exactly. The chimp training again is you know, still in its really baby stages. You know, we went from having a relatively big group kind of all over the place. Now we've got really good stationing. The animals know where they have to be. We've even implemented the same thing as the lions, where we can ask them to wait and state. Not everybody, some of the chimps, there are certainly chimps that don't play that game, but we can ask them to wait and we can then go and open and close our own doors, which is great. Previously, some of those chimps were chimps that would race slides or not let doors be opened or closed. So again, we've put a lot of work into the foundations of teaching them, hey, the door opening and closing isn't a big deal. And they've come leaps and bounds, and it's only sort of really now that we're starting to add a whole host of other behaviors with them, because we're getting really good solid foundations with them.
Yeah, definitely. And I can imagine that, you know, the chimps hitting against the mesh or running up and hitting against the sliding doors being quite impressive and a little intimidating species, that will help trainers as well build confidence in working with them. So they're not seeing that frustration as well.
Yeah, I mean, chimps do this. This is how they, you know, display dominance. It's, you know, they can run and whatever's going to make the most noise, that's what they want. It's really about teaching them, hey, that's fine, you can do all that. But when we're working together, we're nice and calm, and we're nice and quiet. And it's quite funny, our incredible primate manager, Lou Grossfeld, she's worked with chimps for, her whole career, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years, she'll shoot me. It's a very long time. She has got incredible chimp knowledge and has so much experience with them. And once we started implementing these things, all we could hear was chewing in the chimp house, and that was animals being reinforced in bridges. And if you've ever worked with chimpanzees or you've ever been in a chimp house, if that's all you can hear, that is deathly silent, and that means there is a troop of content and happy chimps. There's
so normally
somebody screaming for some reason, but yeah, the animals, the staff, that, you know, they really, really adapted well to the training. And for us, it was always about having those strong, solid foundations with them before we would ever look at moving the training program forward. Because without those solid foundations, we would come unstuck later on.
Yeah, definitely. It's so interesting. It's such a great job that you guys are all doing down there. I did want to touch really quickly, because you mentioned slightly earlier about stationing, and I know I didn't prep you to talk about this, but we touched on it whilst I was down there, and you spoke about how you've been stationing the chimps based on hierarchy and not so much with your less dominant animals. Do you mind touching a little bit on that and how that's worked?
Yeah, so we basically would station, or we station the chimps in groups, but we allow the subordinate animal to pick where he would like to sit on the day. And that's just basically saying, you know, if there's changes in their hierarchy and he doesn't want to sit on the side with the animals that might be causing him issues in that hierarchy, that's completely fine. He can sit on the other side. He just gets to choose where he sits at the start of the session, and then we station him there. So the dominant animals and pretty much everybody else, they have their set spot. 99.9% of the time, it's fine. But for that subordinate animal, we see a massive increase in his confidence when he's able just to pick who he feels comfortable sitting next to that day. And that's completely up to him. So his trainer just kind of waits for him to choose a spot, and then they go to him.
Such a cool technique, because I know we try as hard as we can, but we can't be around them all the time. And with such a complex social dynamic system, I think it's fascinating, and, you know, we miss a lot. So by giving them that opportunity for that animal, it's going to improve the welfare of that animal and probably improve the participation and confidence, like you mentioned, in sessions.
Oh, exactly. He's happy to do his whole training session. You know, we kind of think, why would we make that an issue? We don't need to. If that's where you want to sit and you feel comfortable, great, that's where you can go and sit for this session.
Yeah, so good. And do you have any sort of future training goals that you're looking at achieving with your lions or your chimps?
Yes, lots. We've just started. We've just started this week conditioning blood draws with the lions. So again, anyone who's ever worked with lions knows the challenges around that. They are very full on to train. So most of the time we are trying to reinforce calm and attentive behavior. And then they especially don't love their tail being touched. However, we're doing lots of counter conditioning around that to let them know that allowing us to touch their tail is actually the best thing in the world for them. And then we'll work on blood draws from there.
Oh, that's so good. And I can imagine especially challenging, like you mentioned earlier, with only having the opportunity to actually involve food a few times a week with the amount of sort of fast days that these animals get.
Yeah, exactly. Obviously, it's really important for them to have fast days. So on those allocated days, we won't train them. We even find that it works better in our favor. We'll actually train them after a feed as well, just because their intensity level around that food is far less and we get more out of them after they've pretty much had a full tummy.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Well, we do have two questions to wrap up the episode today from our listeners. So question one, number one, is kind of touching base back onto the lion training. Did your lions come to the zoo with any sort of prior training or behavioral problems possibly that maybe helped or influenced your training programs for them?
They didn't really come with any behaviors at all. The team had conditioned a few behaviors with them prior to the sort of more formal training that we implemented about a year ago. And then we've just elaborated further on that. But yeah, pretty much where they're at now is just from the work that the team has done at the zoo.
Yeah, so cool. And then finally, our last question, what is your favorite thing about working with lions?
They're very full on. You have to be on the ball with them the entire time. They're big and they're broody, but they also have at times a really sensitive side as well, which is kind of cool to see. Yeah, that's I think my favorite thing about working with them.
Yeah, I can imagine it would be so much fun. Definitely intimidating to work with a predator of that size, but so rewarding to be able to achieve all of the things that you've been able to do with them.
I just want them to love me, but I don't think they will. that's all I want.
Yeah, it'll be so good. Yeah. Dean, thank you so much. I honestly feel like this has been such a great conversation and such a good learning for a lot of people listening and some really great examples of how you're using differential reinforcement. So we will definitely post some of the videos that you sent me to go alongside this episode so that everyone can get a good see and good understanding of what you guys are achieving down at Sydney.
Awesome. Amazing. Absolutely love coming on and sharing some of the work, the amazing work that the team does. I'm so proud of them and our animals every day. Everybody is learning and coming along leaps and bounds at the zoo. And it's really, really rewarding for myself to be a part of that and to watch it grow. So thank you for sharing the work that we do.
Wow, that was such a great episode. And we really hope that it got your brains thinking a little bit about how we can use different types of differential reinforcement to better the welfare and behaviors that we're asking from our animals. Like we mentioned in the podcast, we will pop up some of the videos that Dean spoke about just so you guys can have a really clear idea of some of the amazing things that they're doing down at Sydney. But that is me wrapping up for another week. I hope you enjoy the rest of your week and we'll be back in your ear soon.